Care to order, and we'll start with an off-agenda item that we haven't announced, but there probably won't be any objections. We're going to have a cultural event, I've been assured, that won't take longer than 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop. I am not appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals or Health Systems
or anybody else. Client.
Today's the last day of National Poetry Month. I appreciate the committee's indulging me in this little legislative picture poem. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to attend a donkey basketball game in St. Helens. As I was sitting in the high school gym watching the Blues, the St. Helens Police, play the Reds, the St. Helens Fire Department, I realized how much legislative hearings are like donkey basketball. Without making too much of the similarities, as the Reds and Blues try to outscore each other, many of us in the lobby often feel like we're the donkeys. Every donkey game needs rodeo queens. They're the press corps who watch from the sidelines. They enjoy the game almost as much as the real players and donkeys, and they often believe that they know what's happening. Here's how the game proceeds. It's important to know the rules, but you'll be passed the ball and allowed to shoot whether you do or not. Sometimes you have to pull more than your own weight. Once in a while, you may get to make a fast break, but remember that donkeys don't break fast. Neither do senators. Few observers will appreciate it if you use good form. The only way to earn points is with successful shots. It takes 31 in the house to win. Unless you're playing defense, then it takes 30. The rules require blue and red players to stay on their donkeys to pass or shoot the ball. If you dribble, the referees may need to call timeout. There are no rules about what players can do to each other otherwise. Donkey basketball is a contact sport. Everybody should remain calm when constituents, particularly children, are present. It's always nice during the break to give donkeys a cube of sugar. The referees are always prepared to stop the game when the safety of players and donkeys requires them to sweep and shovel. It's a tough job, but somebody needs to do it. Sometimes players need to reach out and touch someone. Too often, it's the donkeys who get hit. Sometimes, it's the pack mules. Some players will learn how to trot down court without falling. Sometimes it seems like everybody's pulling against you. Just because everyone else is stubborn doesn't mean that they're wrong. Sometimes you may be headed in the wrong direction. Eventually, the game may return to your end of the court. Sometimes you're better off sitting and waiting for something to happen than trotting around making it seem that something might be happening. When time runs out, it's best to stop because the game is over and the donkeys are tired. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Bishop, if we had noticed this, we could have adopted it and passed it to the floor. Since there isn't any notice, we can't do that. So instead, I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3490 and ask Representative Comp. Representative Comp, I need to tell you, my father told me there was an old Vaudevillian saying that you never want to follow an animal act. But today we'll make an exception. Representative Comp, I understand we have agreement on this bill. Is that right?
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22. And I was just sharing Chair Greenlick and committee that the legislature feels much like middle school to me. Mm-hmm. And at least there we didn't have to pick up any doo-doo. So there's the advantages in all courts. House Bill, it's my honor to come before you today with House Bill 3490. It is brought to you as part of emergency technicians that do life-saving things in our communities, all of us throughout the state. It's our ambulance services, and sometimes that they were not receiving their fees. And we held this in the subcommittee, and it was passed with a full recommendation to do pass to this committee. And just to share with you what it does, the under current law, every motor vehicle liability insurance policy must include personal injury protection, PIP. PIP benefits for a person injured in the vehicle. Insurers are required to pay personal injury claims promptly after receiving proof a loss has been submitted to the insurer. In the past, this has not always happened. This is the goal of this bill, and this was worked with State Farm Insurance and with our local ambulance service carriers, who is the lobby for the organization. I have people here to help me assist with questions, but after the previous presentation, I hope that we'll be brief with this one also.
I hope we won't need any. We passed the Dash 1 amendments in.
Thank you, Chair.
In the committee, so it comes to us as amended, and it was 401 vote. Can I have a motion to move HB 3490 to the House floor with a new pass recommendation, and we'll have discussion,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cannon?
I move House Bill 3490 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there discussion? Any questions of Representative Cannon? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. HB 3490 passes to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Would you like to carry it?
I'd love to carry it.
Representative Comp will carry it to the floor. Let's work through the list for a while, at least in some order. I mean, in the order listed. We have House Bill 2850. 2850 is a part of what was called the Schmush Bill, I understand, what's commonly referred to, which is the composite bill of several different approaches, but we would like to move that to Ways and Means for possible consideration if, what's the other bill number? 3097?
Correct.
The 3097 doesn't get anywhere out of Ways and Means. So,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
I would move House Bill 2850 to the Ways and Means Committee.
Without recommendation?
Without recommendation?
Without recommendation.
Okay, without recommendation.
We have a motion on the floor to move House Bill 2850 to the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation. Is there any discussion of that?
Mr. Chair, I kind of like the bill.
Would you like it to be with? Would you like to have with recommendation?
No, Mr. Chair.
It's okay as it is. Thank you. Is there any other discussion? Aaron, would you please call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. HB 2850 moves to the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation. Let me make a comment on HB 3502. HB 3502 was a bill that deals with the question of A and B hospitals, particularly B hospitals, and whether our current statutes relating to B hospitals make sense in the current era. And there was a lot of feeling that we ought to find a way to be studying it, but the fact is we got a bunch of amendments that we couldn't get any agreement on, and what I prefer to do is just not act on 3502. As an alternative, we're going to look for a Senate bill that might give us the opportunity to urge a study of the state of B hospitals If that fails, I'm committed to the fact that if I'm on a health committee in the interim, and my hope is that we'll keep the committees intact in the interim this time, but if I'm on a health committee, I'll push to make sure we do some interim work on this question. But it is clear, there's pretty clear agreement we don't want to tamper with the A hospital situation, but there's also pretty clear agreement that we may need to do something with the B hospitals, and we'll be working to try and find the vehicle to urge that, or if not, we'll do it ourselves in the interim. So my intention is just to skip 3502 today try and work on it yet. It's nice when you can get agreement, but it's a little awkward when you can't get agreement, as I've noticed. I didn't close the work session on 2850. I didn't open one on 3502. I will open one on, I'll open a work session on 2952. It comes to us through the access, from the access committee without recommendation. We have amendments on that, is that right?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
We have the,
hot off the press.
The dash one amendments, are they?
Dash three.
The dash three amendment. There's two.
So I think
we have it in the packet. Okay. We're going to have a little bookkeeping problem today. I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I guess I can report. I've been talking to the players on this. I can report that we have grudging agreement from the fully capitated health plans, and with the sponsor of the bill. Not happy agreement, but grudging agreement. So my intention would be to ask for a motion on this amendment. And let's see, we don't have any subsequent referral on this, do we?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. To ask for an amendment on the 2952-3. I mean a motion on that.
Mr. Chair.
Sandy's going to try and keep me coherent today, but it's going to be a tough battle.
I move the dash three amendments to House Bill 2952.
Is there any discussion on the dash three amendments? The dash three amendments would add only, as you remember, the original bill had a whole long list of things that would be added to the financial report that the fully capitated health plans make to OMAP. This would only add the element of the salaries of the three top executives in the plan. The other items would disappear. There's no fiscal with this because it's reports that are already made and received.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
I personally would need a couple minutes to read it and look back at it before I vote.
Unless you want to go forward.
No, well, I think it would make sense. How should we do that? Should we move on to the next one, or just stand at ease for a couple of minutes? Okay, let's stand at ease for a couple of minutes and get a chance.
While we're standing at ease, can I ask?
Or before we stand at ease.
With these amendments, you said it was grudging support. Is there known opposition with these amendments or to these amendments?
Mr. Phillips, you want to join us? And no, I think DCBS is okay with it.
Mr. Chair? Do we know if Dr. Goldberg and Department of Human Services is supportive of this and what benefit this brings to public policy arena?
Jim, you want to come and comment as well? We'll get all the folks up here. You can be reading it. Jim?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Edge. I'm the interim administrator of the Division of Medical Assistance Programs in the Department of Human Services. The department is officially neutral on these amendments. We're fine with them. If the committee chooses to pass them, we understand that there has been an agreement reached between the two sides on it, and so we're fine with this. We can administer these. Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Paul Phillips, representing the managed care organizations. I want to be very careful on how I say this. You have categorized it as begrudging. I am not overtly advocating no votes on this. I would be happier if indeed everybody involved in the whole process, not just managed care, had to report the same things. It's your choice, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to die on a spear on this one because we got more important bills in this process to worry about.
Ms. Ariel, do you want to talk about what health plans generally do in this area? The reports that go to you all.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I'm not familiar with the details of the bill, but I could answer questions as to what's in this bill and then how that would be.
The question is, do the health plans that report to you report on salaries of their top executives?
Mr. Chair, yes, they do.
This is an attempt to make these health plans equivalent. These do not report to you, but they report to OMAP.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. There are some of the plans that do provide services at DHS that are licensed by us, but some others that are not. The ones that are not would not report today to us. I believe it's the top five salaries on our side, but I'm not positive of that. Is that correct?
Are there any questions? Mm-hmm.
Could one of the three of you tell us which organizations are not required to do this? And if we're adding managed care health services, and if Mr. Arrow says that other groups are already doing it, are there others that are not doing it that aren't part of either of these lists?
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, my name is Paul Phillips. I think for the record, there was the 501c3s do have to report. That would be one. That would be Care Oregon. I think I got the right number, C3. But what I was referring to is the health, the sphere would be dental, vision, these other partners in the whole process. Not necessarily the commercial guys that already report, but of managed care that report all the stuff that we did. There's a whole bunch more than just managed care groups, and that's what I was referring to, Mr. Chair and Representative Richardson.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Cote.
I just want to say I'd be supportive of asking the DCOs and the MHOs as well to do this. We can talk about that on the Senate side, perhaps.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair. It's just a matter of fairness. I'm not, it's public money. It's,
sure.
It's not a big thing. I just think everybody ought to be playing by the same rules.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, just a question.
Hold on, guys.
And the salaries that we're talking about being reported here, does that include salaries and benefits?
It does in your material, is that right?
Mr. Chair, that is
components.
There's a very detailed description of what salaries include, and it does include fringes.
Yeah, it was an attempt to make it equivalent to what health insurance programs regulated by DCBS do on DCBS. We attempt to make this equivalent to that.
Now, Mr. Chair, I see that Paul's point out it says executive salary and benefit packages in the amendments.
Thank you. Do I have a motion on the dash threes? Representative Cannon already has. Thank you. Is there any discussion on the dash threes? Is there any objection to the dash threes? Dash threes are part of 2952. Can I have a motion to Representative Cannon?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2952 to the floor as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion on that motion? Please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. And I think we'll ask, I think we'll ask Representative Tomei to carry it. And if she rejects that, then we'll find somebody else. Well, let's take House Bill 2801, which was rescheduled from Friday. We have adopted the Dash 1 amendments already, I think. Is that correct, Representative Boone?
Yes.
And the proposer was not interested in the Dash 2s, so I think we'll...
Dash 3s.
From who?
I believe these are from Representative Blasio. Is that right? His staff is here if you want.
Is there? Yes. Can you come and talk to us about it, please?
Thank you, Chair Greenlee. My name is Eva Rupito, legislative assistant to Representative Glizio. The Dash 3 amendments were a concern brought up about informed consent. They wanted to make sure that the committee that's appointed for the stem cell research guidelines were able to establish what informed consent should be instead of having it already put into the law. Yes.
Why don't we address the Dash 3s first, and then we'll go back to discussion of the bill as amendment. Is there a motion on the Dash 3s?
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2801.
Is there any discussion on the Dash 3 amendments?
Mr. Chair? Yeah, I guess I have questions about informed consent and the effects of this amendment. I notice it would delete Section 7, or at least... I believe much of Section 7 of the bill.
You are correct, Representative Cannon. It deletes from line 6 to 45 on page 4 and then carries over to line 14 of page 5 up until Section 8.
So I guess I wonder why that was proposed and whether that's connected to informed consent, and more generally what the effect of the informed consent language that it inserts would be.
Whether it weakens it or strengthens it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, President Cogan.
My reading of it, just quickly, is that it's trying to leave the details of the informed consent procedure up to the advisory group. Is that the intent? Yeah.
I do have to sympathize with committee members. It's complex to get...
So my impression was the thinking that by doing this, we're already trying to set in stone what we're talking about, and it makes more sense to have the committee themselves come up with it, because there could be a lot of debate around this section. It makes sense to pull it out and say, go figure it out and come back to us. Is that the plan?
Right. Representative Greenlee and Chair, Vice Chair Kosek, I believe that that is what the intent is, and Brian Beringer can talk more about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Brian Beringer with OHSU for the record. Our VP of research, when he testified, actually alluded to concerns about what was going on in Section 7. And in the original bill, they sort of outlined a lot of informed consent, new procedures and such. And our concern was just that we haven't taken a look at this. We haven't compared it to federal law. We don't know what other states are doing. So rather than, you know, just put it into the bill right now, why don't we put in a section that says, let's have the committee study, take a look at federal law, take a look at what's happening in other states, talk to some practitioners, see what makes sense, and then build an informed consent piece that we can put into the law after that. So we just didn't want to rush it.
Questions? Representative Cannon, do you want...
No, that's very helpful. I appreciate the clarification, and it seems like something that we should support.
Ron, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Oh, we already put the motion on the table.
I think dash threes are on the floor. Is there any objection yet to the dash threes? Dash threes are added. We have House Bill 2801 as amended with the dash ones and the dash threes.
Mr. Chair?
And it will have a Ways and Means. It will have a Ways and Means referral.
Mr. Chair? I heard as you opened the work session on 2801. I heard what you know, and I saw the email correspondence with one of the sponsors on the dash two amendments. I would still like to move the dash two amendments and have a discussion on them. Is that
that's fine?
Are you okay with that?
Yes,
okay.
I'm fine with that.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2801.
Is there any discussion on the dash two amendments?
Yes. May I discuss the dash two?
You may discuss it, and I may discuss it as well.
Oh, I'm sure you, yeah, no, I, please, it'll be a good exchange. Mr. Chair, we had a little bit of discussion on the dash two amendment when we had the last work session on 2801. Basically, what the dash two amendments do is take out what some people construe as the very finely pointed language in this bill, which is therapeutic cloning. And that's, I think that was, for some of the advocates, that may very well be the intent. The reason I would recommend that we adopt the dash two amendments is because it takes out this. With the dash ones, we broaden this to include all stem cell research. And if you recall some of the testimony we had, there's nine lines, if you will, of stem cell research. Only one of those lines or branches, however you want to qualify it, is embryonic. And even within embryonic, therapeutic is only part of the embryonic question. And in my opinion, with the adoption of the dash one amendment, we could adopt the dash two to remove the specific reference to therapeutic cloning. All stem cell research will still be within this bill, though, because we've done that with the dash one amendments. But I think what we do here is we eliminate making this bill specifically about, and we talk about broad-based stem cell, but the only thing we talk about specifically of all the different lines of stem cell research is the therapeutic cloning. And that's, as I think a lot of the committee knows, that is the most of all the avenues and aspects of stem cell research, it is therapeutic cloning, which is the most controversial. And so I look at this as I mentioned, I'm somebody who would greatly benefit from stem cell research. I look at this as a way to gather support rather than to sort of lose support on the bill. I don't know how to say it any better than that. So that's my advocacy for the dash two.
Are there other comments?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess I've always, in the whole stem cell debate, it's always kind of befuddled me why there was so much, and I say this really for the point of serious discussion, but why there was so much concern about therapeutic cloning as opposed to other types of embryonic stem cell research. I guess to me it suggests something about that word cloning and our resistance to that. But knowing that the point here is not to reproduce exact copies of human beings. In fact, the whereas clauses of the bill say that any attempt to clone a human being is in direct conflict with the policies of the state, but rather, of course, the attempt is to produce cells that could be used in therapeutic ways. I'm concerned about the effect of this limiting amendment, and I'm interested, frankly, in a better understanding of why, apart from this notion that we might be creating little human clones of actual human beings, why there is so much, in some quarters at least, concern about this idea.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's a great question, and thanks for the opportunity to keep talking about this. Embryonic stem cell research is controversial. The broad spectrum of embryonic stem cell research is controversial for a lot of the reasons that we heard the testimony the other day, for all those reasons and some others. However, with the in vitro fertilization aspect of embryo, there's some question marks. I mean, Representative, I even remember you asking one of the questions. I have the same question regarding embryo. If we're going to dispose of it because it's waste and there's no other application, or we can use those embryos for stem cell research. I mean, a lot of us think, well, wow, why not use them toward the research? The ethical and moral
problem, in my opinion, on the therapeutic cloning of embryonic stem cells is because you're specifically, and once again, this is going to delve into the question of when does life begin, okay? Some people don't see life beginning at conception or see life changing, and I understand that argument and that discussion. For those who believe that life begins at conception, however, what therapeutic cloning says is that as soon as you've made that embryo, you've created life. And so what we're doing, in effect, we being the research community, is we're creating life to destroy it. We're destroying it by pulling the stem cells out. That's the moral and ethical concern. Whereas the same thing happens with embryos from in vitro fertilization, but they were not embryos created for the sole purpose of destroying. In fact, quite the opposite. They're embryos created to help couples get pregnant, and for whatever reason, those embryos weren't used, and so they're just sitting there, not to be unscientific, but on a shelf. And so it's so that's I don't know if that distinction is clear. That's the distinction in my mind.
And Mr. Chair, it is that does help, and that is a clear distinction. I guess the distinction in my mind that seems perhaps as relevant, if not more so, is the notion of fertilization, egg and sperm, which doesn't, in my understanding, take place when we're talking about cloning for the purposes of therapeutic research. So there's a separate distinction there. I know that it gets quite complicated quickly. I understand the distinction you're making. I'm not sure it's the most significant one here, but thank you.
Yeah, I think Professor Galizio shared with me some questions, some answers that we had asked the stem cell scientists. And the real question you raised, Representative Bruin, I think comes into this point. It seems to me, once we accept the notion of embryonic stem cell research inside this whole stem cell research picture, the argument is that this is just one of the many techniques that are used to create the scientific material that's going to be used. And I mean, I think I follow in the same way on Representative Cannon's point that this is, I mean, the big issue is embryonic stem cell research, and once that's a piece of it, this is just one of the very basic scientific techniques that are used. So
It is, Mr. Chair, and I agree with that 100%, and that's why I would suggest that we don't need to if what you say is absolutely correct, and I think it is, then I don't think there's a reason that we need to, of all the various aspects of stem cell research, why we need to pick that one as the only one of the large and growing list of lines of stem cell research. We have to pick that one out specifically and have it named, called out in the bill, when in fact we've already drawn the bill with the -1 amendments to include all stem cell research. And I, for one, wouldn't want to limit the research community at OHSU or the private research communities in Oregon to say, hey, this is your narrow parameter. I don't know what the science of stem cells is going to be 2 years down the road or 10 years down the road. I want it as broad as possible, not narrow. And that's one aspect. And I think, Mr. Chair, I think we have to be cognizant. We may not agree with it. I mean, there may be strong disagreement against me on this position, on how I feel about this. But I think we need to be cognizant as a committee that disagreement is out there among people who want to see stem cell research advance. I'm one of those. And I think this provides us a way to sort of acknowledge that there are, even if we don't agree with them, acknowledge there are great moral concerns out there without limiting what we want Oregon to do in the area of stem cell research. I'm sorry to repeat myself. I just want to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry I missed the testimony of Professor Wolf because when he was here at the Access Subcommittee. Because not only does it look really interesting, but he's my neighbor. The part in here where I'm trying to find something that would explain the distinction and what the -3 amendments would do, and on the bottom of page two, the best I can tell, he talks about how the potential we're most excited about, and Professor Wolf is from the retired from OHSU but has been a professor and senior scientist in the National Institutes of Health doing primate stem cell research for the past decade. But what he's saying is that the potential we're most excited about is the use of embryonic stem cells in the treatment of human disease. One of the limitations is the probability that the immune system of patients receiving embryonic stem cells from another donor will recognize the cells as foreign and reject them. One possible solution to this dilemma involves the phenomena of therapeutic cloning. And that's when he talks about therapeutic cloning in its schematic form, and forgive me, I have no science background. The process involves harvesting a somatic cell, which I'm assuming is from the patient, perhaps a fibroblast from a skin biopsy, and transferring that cell or its nucleus into an enucleated egg called a cytoplast. The development of the reconstructed embryo is initiated, and patient-specific embryonic stem cells are derived from the resulting blastocyst. So it looks like there is a category of stem cell research that deals with a disease where the patient might reject a foreign stem cell, where this particular type of creating a stem cell is useful beyond, I mean, that may be limited by the amendment. So I just wanted to point that out. And perhaps somebody with more, a lot more science background than me can confirm that I'm reading this correctly.
I probably have an hour more science background than you have. But the basic issue, I think, is really described in line, in page 2, lines 16 through 19, which I think this would take out.
Of the bill?
Of the bill itself, which takes an unfertilized human ovum and then transfers into it the nucleus of a donated human somatic cell. So it takes an unfertilized ovum and takes a cell probably from, ultimately from the patient itself. So then it would create it says stimulates it until it reaches the blastocyst stage. So it's a combination of things. The real question I think we need to address is whether the -3 amendment, the -2 amendments, whether the consequences of the -2 amendments would be to eliminate the use of this kind of a technique, rather than dealing with the creating more politically correct language to make the bill less offensive. I think that's the point you're making, is that we took out the embryonic stem cell language to make it less offensive.
Be careful here, Mr. Chair. The point is that therapeutic cloning is offensive to people.
Absolutely.
Okay. But it's also a category of stem cell research. What I'm suggesting is that we've got a 2801 is a great vehicle, and I applaud you and Representative Galizio for bringing this. I mean, we all know the vital importance and the future importance of stem cell research. I guess what I'm trying to say is the way this bill is written, I know it wasn't on purpose, but it is offensive to those people who have a problem with one very small aspect of stem cell research, whereas all of us, or just about all of us, embrace the wider concept. And so to your point, would eliminating, with the -2 amendments, would eliminating the specific reference to therapeutic cloning, would that in any way reduce or restrict the bill? I don't think it does in a practical aspect. I say that because we passed the -1, which said, hey, we're throwing it out there to OHSU to study or to broaden their scope and to go attract private and public dollars when it comes to stem cell research. And we'll leave it up to the experts, and we can have these moral discussions with the work groups that this bill creates, or with people marching around with placards outside OHSU. I mean, that's going to happen regardless. I want to leave that to them, Mr. Chair. When we're taking a bill, though, that we're presenting as sort of the voice of all of Oregon, I'd like it to, if we can remove the aspect that some people really find morally repugnant, and not hurt what we're trying to do. That's one of the things I'm trying to accomplish, Mr. Chair.
Chair?
Yes.
I appreciate that explanation of the intent. I think one of the things in the -2s that I would miss that would be taken out of the bill is the language that does put in statutory language that
reproductive cloning is wrong and unacceptable, and I would be sorry to see that lost from this bill in lines 1 through 5.
Top of page 2.
Whereas therapeutic cloning stem cell research holds enormous potential for treating or even curing some diseases, the reproductive cloning of human beings is morally and ethically unacceptable, and whereas the reproductive cloning of human beings poses grave health risks to any child who may be produced in this manner. I think that that's important balancing language in the bill, and I would be disappointed and troubled to see that go away.
As it would
have been. Mr.
Chair? Yeah, I have a similar thought. It seems like, as I understand this better, the original intent of this bill was to sort of just point out that contrast between our thinking about what is morally and ethically acceptable and what, according to the Whereas Clause, is actually a policy of the state, which is that reproductive cloning is in direct conflict with the policies of Oregon. And then the reason for having this language about therapeutic cloning is to say, but notwithstanding that, we want to be clear about this distinction between therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning, so not to chill the effect, not to have a chilling effect on therapeutic cloning research at OHSU. So it's that distinction that I'm worried about losing if we adopt the dash twos. In general, I really appreciate where Representative Bruin is coming from, and the notion of broadening this as much as possible seems like a valuable one, and it's why I supported the amendment to remove the language on embryonic. So I think that's sort of where I am on this, Mr. Chair.
Are we ready for vote on this amendment? Roll call, please.
And it's the dash two.
Dash two.
No.
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 Yes.
No.
Aye. No. Motion fails, but it's an important discussion. I think we're going to do, and I thank you for it.
Thank you. Yes. I appreciate it.
I do for unanimous consent that we reconsider this and this motion and delete the by conceptual amendment the lines that cause so much pain without this whereas. If the amendment could go through, if we left in the first two whereases, lines 1 through 5 on page 2, then it's a good amendment, except for that one thing, because that does confuse policy. Then would we be wise to allow those to stay in? Take out the rest.
I can tell you don't have unanimous consent for that.
It's 40%, so I take. Well, all takes a side. It takes 2/3. I'm just wondering.
I'm opposed to it.
Canon would be favored, then we'd have it. But if the answer is no, it doesn't hurt to ask.
Yeah.
No. So, anyway, just an up or down vote on unanimous consent, then since I already made the motion.
Well, unanimous consent. You don't have unanimous consent.
Well, that is a term meaning do we have 2/3 majority of this committee? And that can be done. Well, you know what? I got a feeling that I'll withdraw the motion.
Thank you. What do I have here? Okay, we have a bill in front of us with a motion to move it to Ways and Means. I'll take a motion to move it to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation, then we can make some statements, I think. We have a motion to move it to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2801 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. As amended.
Thank you. Should we just give everybody a chance to make a statement? Would that be useful? Okay. Colin, you want to go to a vote?
Okay.
Well,
we can still be
making statements when you come back. Oh, okay. So there is going to be discussion?
Yeah.
We'll come and get you.
Oh, it's going to be soon, I think, though.
Hold on.
Okay.
Sounds like it's
Let's have discussion. Would it make sense to ask everybody to comment? or anybody who wants to?
I want to comment.
Okay, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was trying to look through the bill to find out where this therapeutic cloning, which, and I think cloning is the word that's really the issue with people. And I get over to Section 3, which is really what this bill is about. The Human Stem Cell Research Committee shall develop guidelines for research involving the derivation or use of human embryonic stem cells in Oregon. And we took out embryonic, it's my understanding.
Yes.
By January 1st, 2008. The guidelines shall address the balance between the state policy of promoting research involving the derivation of human stem cells by any method, including somatic cell nuclear transfer, and the ethical considerations that arise with such research. So I don't think we're making a final decision here. I think what we're saying is that we want this committee to go to research everything and, considering the ethical considerations that arise with such research, come back with a recommendation. So I don't want to limit what they can do and what they can consider, especially since we're telling them to keep in mind the ethical considerations that arise. I'm finished.
Good. First of all, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you very much for your willingness to sort of hear my tale on this one, if you will. My same concerns remain in that I think we had an opportunity for a good vehicle that in my mind really didn't eliminate any category, any line of stem cell research. By not doing that, I think, Mr. Chair, we have focused, and I absolutely hear and can read Representative Bonamici's point in that it calls it out and does say, hey, we're going to look at the moral and ethical considerations. My point remains, Mr. Chair, that I don't think the bill needed to do that. I think the bill could have been broad-based, but instead, we've very, very, very narrowly crafted at least the wording and how this bill will roll out. And I don't think we needed to do that. I think that aspect of it is one small aspect of the future upside potential of stem cell research. And so I have concerns about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other comments? I guess I would like a speech comment. In spite of the fact that we've had two of the hottest issues around over the last 2 days, my preference is always to try and find a way to work things out. In this bill, and I think with fluoride as well, there just isn't any way. I mean, this isn't something you compromise because it has very strong moral and ethical decisions that are on people's mind. I was moved when we heard, I may have mentioned it in the subcommittee, I was moved when we heard a lot of testimony on the organ donation bills where people talked about how important it was, say mothers talking about how important it was that a dead child could contribute organs so that, in a sense, they could provide life out of death, in a sense. And people talking about their own desire to be able to move beyond death by donating tissues or organs or their body to scientific research or things that happen. It seems to me this is a very similar situation and that it ought to be appropriate that people that have donated ova and sperm to in an attempt to help their own fertility situation ought to be able to consent that part of them be able to be, rather than be destroyed, be moved forward and provide the possibility of enhancing future life. Personally, I support this bill and I hope we'll be able to move it out of Ways and Means, which seems like a mystical black box to me more and more all the time. I think we'll take a roll call.
Is anybody else speaking?
There's a motion on the floor to accept 2801, is this?
Yes.
2801 is amended with the dash 1 and the dash 3 of the two ways and means.
Aye.
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 No.
Yeah, aye.
No.
No.
Aye.
801, we'll move to Ways and Means. Thank you very much for that discussion. This was not an easy one. We have House Bill 3100. Representative Bonamici, are you going to give us a little clue on this one?
Oh, I can, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3100, we heard in the subcommittee, and it deals with an antiquated law. The legal issue is known as the corporate practice of medicine prohibition, and it originates from old case law back in the 40s. It's a doctrine that prohibits corporations from directly employing licensed health professionals. And the intent was to really protect the independence of medical judgment from the profit interests of corporations. It doesn't really make sense currently when it is applied to places like federally qualified health centers. And so what this bill does is removes the provision, and so it will allow nonprofit corporations to employ health professionals.
Like hospitals and other things that are probably already doing it illegally.
Right.
Here's what we can make out. It's a 1945 bill.
Awesome.
This comes to us with the Dash 1 amendments already included. Is there any discussion? House Bill 3100.
Yes. I would move House Bill 3100 to the floor with a D-pass recommendation as amended.
Is there any discussion on that? Please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Is this a candidate for the consent calendar?
Yep.
No, does that feel like the right thing to do?
Okay.
Right, we have a motion to that effect, please.
Mr. Chair, I would move that House Bill 3100 be placed on the consent calendar.
Any discussion? I guess we should call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Yeah, he doesn't grab himself. He does all he needs in the first page. HB 3100 moves to the floor on the consent calendar. We have next, what's that? Yes. We have House Bill 2927, which comes, wait a minute, close a work session on HB 3100, open a work session on HB 2927, brought to us from the Policy Committee and carried by Representative Cannon.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think Representative Broom might have been appointed to carry it, but I am happy to say a few words about it. I did introduce the bill.
Well, let's both you comment on it, then.
Representative Broom, you want to?
Sorry.
It's okay.
I was informed just recently that you're not having something. House Bill 2927, Mr. Chair, is a bill which passed out of the Policy Committee. It basically establishes a task force for anatomical gift donation. We heard some very compelling and disturbing testimony, Mr. Chair, regarding what happens in sort of the unregulated world of anatomical gifts. And primarily what we're talking about is not the anatomical gifts that are covered under federal statute, which are transplantable organs and tissue for the most part. We're talking about things that are generally used in research and study that are non-transplantable arms and legs are something that comes to mind. Apparently, and that's the, I mean, without casting too many aspersions, but some of the testimony said there's some shops in Oregon that really, really need to be regulated, and they made a pretty compelling argument why that needs to be regulated for a bunch of moral, ethical, family concerns, and what 2927 would do would, Mr. Chair, is establish this task force that would begin looking at some sort of a regulatory environment for these sort of anatomical gifts.
Mr. Chair, I don't have much to add. I think that was a great summary of the bill. The -1 amendments, which I believe the subcommittee adopted, do clarify that we are concerned with non-transplantable anatomical gifts. In fact, changes the name of the task force to reflect that fact. They also include a representative of OHSU on the committee, as well as a representative of the State Mortuary and Cemetery Board. And that is about it.
I don't know if I got the hand of those.
Where are the -1s?
We adopted the -1.
Okay.
I mean, adopted.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we adopted the -1.
Okay, great. Was there Gilson?
Mr. Chair, I was just hoping to put on the record, I, like others on the committee that heard testimony on this bill, was deeply disturbed by what sounded to be extreme abuse of human corpses, and I went away wondering why such an industry exists at all and what useful purpose there might be. I was away a week ago with my son and went to a science museum where we had the opportunity to see a pre-exhibit for the plasticization project, where they take maybe an arm, maybe a leg, and they basically preserve that body part and display it for people to learn in museums. And many people have maybe seen the advertisements for this, where you might see someone in an athletic pose seeing how the tendons and the muscles work together. So it caught my eye for many reasons. And one was this bill, and it occurred to me that perhaps there are some useful purposes for the use of the human body and the parts therein beyond transplantation. But it also occurred to me that the body parts and the organs that my son and I saw were presented in a very respectful kind of a way that was very respectful of the human body and promoted greater understanding of that. So I support this bill because I think it's important that we regulate that. I just thought it was important to add that other piece of the puzzle that was kind of the light bulb on to me about what some of the legitimate uses in this non-transplantable world might be, and it was instructive for me to see that. I know it's not the intention of the bill to make that not happen, but just because we had so much testimony on the record, I thought it was important to put that on the record as well.
Mr. Chair, I really appreciate that point, and also Representative Gelzer's understanding that is not the primary focus of this task force. I think some of the most sort of gripping testimony that we heard had to do with what the parts of the body that we don't see, what gets returned to the funeral home for cremation, and the lack of care that is alleged to take place, lack of respect with the remainders. So appreciate that point, and that'll be something that the task force looks into.
Yeah, it turns out there are a lot of interesting uses, and part of it isn't necessarily those uses. I mean, for example, in a cardiology convention, they may get several hearts for displays to show how different products work. But we heard some just appalling testimony how at the end of those conventions, they just sweep everything up and throw in the garbage. I mean, it was just really some stuff that was appalling, and I think this is something we really need to look into. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2927 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any and?
As amended.
As amended.
There's no subsequent.
No subsequent.
How come there's no fiscal?
I think
all right, so it may end up going somewhere before we're done.
Mr. Chair, the one of the effects of the amendment was to make the Legislative Administration Committee, if I heard that correctly.
It'll go that way.
The home for the task force. I don't know whether that means it doesn't need a fiscal or not, but we'll see.
I'm not sure about that, frankly, but if we send it to the speaker's nest, they'll figure out what to do with it. Is there any other discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. House Bill 2927 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Close the work session on House Bill. Whoops. Oh, yes. Thank you very much. Representative Cannon, would you join us, please?
Thank you.
Now, can I close the work session?
No, you
can't. Close the work session on House Bill 2927. And open a work session on House Bill 3093, brought to us from the Policy Committee. Representative Gelser, would you brief us on this, please?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3093 would adopt some additional rights within the Bill of Rights for patients in long-term care facilities. This bill was brought to us primarily from advocates for individuals with Parkinson's disease and some concerns about the importance of having adequate access to appropriate nutrition and care from specially and appropriately trained staff and access to medication that is dispensed appropriately. In the committee, we adopted the Dash 1 amendments, which removed the portion related to medication that turned out to be a very complicated issue, and the parties agreed to have that removed. So the amended bill would focus on the right to receive care from facility staff trained to provide care that is specific to that person's condition, and also the resident's right to have appropriate nutrition and diet while in the facility. And it was passed with a due pass recommendation to the full as amended.
Okay, and is there a subsequent on this?
There's
not, huh? Can we get a motion, then we can have discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3093 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion. And I think we have agreement from the industry. Is that right, Representative Gelser?
Mr. Chair.
We do, and I want to just thank the Oregon Healthcare Association and the individuals with the Parkinson's group and a couple of the other groups who got together and talked about how they could adjust this, and that's what the Dash 1s were about, and it's a good first step on this important issue.
Great, thank you. Can I ask a question?
Yes. I'd like to ask a question of the subcommittee members as to what effects this might have on small adult foster care homes.
It technically applies to skilled nursing homes.
That was part of the question. Who else did it affect in the original bill?
Mr. Chair, the proponents were interested in amending it to include assisted living facilities, residential care, adult foster, adult. And we said, no, let's just leave it the way it is, which is skilled nursing. So that's where we start.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cote.
Mm-hmm.
Any further discussion? We have a roll call.
Aye.
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 Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And I think we're saying Gelsey, would you like to play a role?
Sure.
Thank you. Good job, Representative Protect. Thank you very much. Okay. Moving along. Close a work session on House Bill 3093. And open a work session on House Bill 3269. Let's start if I can invite Dan Leonard up to talk about it. And then I think we have agreement on this, but I'm not sure. So
I have a letter to submit.
Please.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
So we're on 3269?
We are.
Yes.
3269.
So we heard this bill in the policy subcommittee, came forth in the hospital association, and we had a lively first hearing, and the hospitals and the ambulatory surgical center said, we'll go off and talk this over, which they did, quite constructively, I thought. And we might want to step down for a second if people need a chance. I think many of us, this is the first time we're seeing the dash threes, because they were a work in progress. But the idea was to reach some accommodation around certification requirements, things like that for ambulatory surgical centers. So I'll leave it at that. And
great. Let's.
Because I think all of us, this is the first time we've seen these. I think they just got finished.
We'll hear from Mr. Leonard, and then we'll bring the parties up and see what we hear from them as well.
Perfect. Hey, this is new for me. I'm a total rookie here.
Please just introduce yourself.
Sharon Greenlick, everybody. I am a practicing surgeon here in Salem, and so what I want to try to do is bring...
Please introduce yourself.
Oh, my name is Dan Leonard, MD, practicing plastic surgeon here in Salem, Oregon. I'm also a board member of MVIPA, the Mid-Valley Independent Physicians Association. And that's really kind of where I'm coming to you from, which is a party you haven't heard from on this bill. And I think it's really important to hear the third leg, because you have hospitals, you've got the ambulatory surgery centers, and you also have the physicians. And that's really kind of where I'm bringing my testimony now. I talked to various people about what the discussion was, and surprisingly, I thought the discussion up to this point that would be pro for the measure would be safety issues. But apparently what I've heard is that there is fear that it's going to, you know, these centers are going to run amok and there's going to be so many of them and so forth. And the history of the whole ambulatory surgery center, I mean, really dates back to 10, 15 years ago. I mean, it really wasn't in existence. And so what happened is all procedures were done at the hospital, you know, longer inpatient and what we now call outpatient procedures. They then developed the ambulatory surgery center concept, and so there was kind of a migration of those procedures out away from the centers. If you look at the studies and the numbers, it's pretty much that kind of migration outward is kind of stabilized. So the fear that, you know, these centers are going to be created and then pretty soon they're going to be so many of them, they're going to be creating business, that's kind of been shown by normalized data to not be true. I mean, it's kind of, you know, the same amount of procedures are being done, it's just a higher percentage of the ambulatory type cases are being done in these centers. So the end result of it is that the hospitals have lost revenue from these cases going to the other centers. And, you know, to try to be gentle and, you know, easy in discussion, I mean, it's left the hospitals short revenue. What this proposes is basically that by restricting or increasing the criterion, allowing people to go to surgery centers, you're going to now force a migration of those patients back to the hospital setting, and they're going to make higher revenues. CMS, which is, you know, the federal, you know, arm of medicine, they've actually looked at and very much supported the whole ambulatory surgery center model. It is a very cost-effective model. They feel that it's important as an adjunct to an integrated and mixed healthcare system. So it's a center that has some basically some headway. It's got some staying power, and it's been shown to be a good thing for American medicine. So when I heard that cost was an issue, I think the studies are really clear that cost at a surgery center is dramatically less. I mean, if you look at the data, it'll be three or four times less for the same procedure, the fee that the surgery center will charge or the fee that the hospital will charge. In the insurance business, obviously that drives up premiums if you're going to pay more for insurance. In the government, in all of our assistance programs, it's going to drive up all the costs for the government. So the surgery centers will actually decrease those costs. If you then, if one of the tenets that you're thinking about is then many excess procedures are going to be done, you know, because of these centers. And I'm saying that's just not true. If you look at the studies, it's not an accurate thing. Same amount of medicine and the same amount of procedures and the same amount of illness kind of continues to go on. It's just there's been a shift outside of the hospital. The second thing that you think about is safety. And that's really, I mean, as physicians, that's always our utmost concern because, you know, it's just that utmost concern. If you look at the measure of the bill, the House bill, the way it was put forward, with the tightening restrictions, to me that's just an economic thing where they're trying to drive patients back in. If you look at the other amendments that are about patient safety, then I think that's something that I think if the committee feels, says, no, you know what, we need to be on top of this phenomenon, we need to make sure that it's safe, and that's our job, and we're going to take that as our responsibility, I think that's absolutely a good thing. As a plastic surgeon, the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, 2.5 years ago, they made it a regulation that to be a member of our society, you have to work at an accredited surgery facility, whether it's JCO or we have, there's all sorts of, there's Quad SE and things like that, AAA and Quad S, but which we've always tried to be on the forefront of safety, and I think that's a good thing to do, is to say, as a surgery center, you do have to have certification from either a national organization or the state, which will provide a baseline set of regulations to make sure that everything is safe. So I think those parts of the amendment on the back of the page are fine. What I have a problem with was the original time limits, where they set 2 hours, and that's been...
Dr. Leonard, are you referring to the Dash 3 amendments?
Yes, the Dash 3 amendments, I'm sorry.
Which I assume we're going to adopt today.
Okay.
I don't think you need to go...
Well, no, because what I'd like to do is I have on Section 4 of the Dash 3 amendments. Like I said, I'm a rookie. If my diatribe is too long, cut me short.
Okay.
But the problem is with the time limits that you have, which the time limits have been given up, but on Dash 4 it still says that you will not allow an overnight, you know, not overnight stay, but we call it 23-hour stay. And what that does is it affects a lot of patients who end up having surgery either from a distant place, patients from Lincoln City, other places in my area that come, they'll have their surgery, which fits in the ambulatory surgery center, but instead of having to get in their car, drive back, they can stay in the center, be monitored and watched, and then they go home in the morning. And people, more and more people have their own medical savings plan for those people. They save for their plan, it's their money, and so they have a procedure done, and say they want to stay overnight and they have to be at a hospital, they're going to pay four times the amount because their medical savings plan isn't covered by an HMO. So, you know, and that part of it, I think putting a time limit on it, which is something that Oregon would be doing that no one else really does, that's my big objection to that is the Section 4 on the overnight stay. And they gave up the time limits because if you look at the safety data, there's no increased safety being at the hospital overnight. The nursing situation in the
There isn't any reason to discuss something that's not in here.
Oh, it is.
You're still talking about the overnight stay?
Correct.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Correct.
I thought you were talking about the time limit.
No. I'm talking about the overnight stay. And on the overnight stay, if you say it's much safer at a hospital, there's no equipment that the hospitals have that the accredited surgery centers don't have, and the nursing staff at hospitals is 1-to-1, at surgery centers is 1-to-1, whereas at the hospital it's about 10-to-1. If you talk to patients when they're at a hospital when they have pain, and I work at both places, it takes 20 minutes to get someone to come. It takes another 20 minutes to get the pain medicine. At a surgery center, because it's 1-to-1, the time between complaint by patient, response by the nurse is 1 minute, 2 minutes. And patients will tell you over and over again, it was a much more comfortable place to be. So that's really my big plea, is I would like to have that revised, or at least so that we can continue with the current situation, which is you can do a 23-hour stay, which is in patients and Oregonians' interest.
Any questions of Dr. Leonard? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thanks for your time. Sorry for my rookie.
No problem. Thank you for giving us testimony. It's easier than plastic surgery, isn't it?
I'm an expert in that. Much harder.
Can I have the parties that worked on the Dash 3s join us and tell us where we are here? Okay, you want to describe the journey of the Dash 3s and whether they meet all your needs?
Two Chair Greenlich and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Jane Ellen Whiteance with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. On behalf of Oregon's 57 hospitals, we brought this forward really based on patient safety. I know that a lot of people are still concerned that we brought it forward on based on financial interest. If we had done that, we would have specifically addressed financial requirements in the bill. We would have talked more aggressively about pulling financial resources out of hospitals and endangering the financial well-being of our community hospitals. That hasn't been our goal. That hasn't been the message that we've been carrying forward, and it's in the Dash 3 amendments. You will see that we focus on patient safety and the OMA and the ambulatory surgical centers and the anesthesiologists. I have a root canal done today, so if I lisp a little bit, bear with me. But we came forward together and said what makes sense in Oregon on patient safety. And I respect Dr. Leonard's position and his concerns about the bill, but when we discussed timeframes that were actually addressed, we modeled these after the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services requirements. We gave flexibility for DHS to be able to work around where the federal government is heading on these issues. We also specifically said not traditionally, not generally, not typically, I think was the word, expected to stay overnight, because the ambulatory surgical centers had brought up the fact that people do travel from long distances, especially in states like Oregon, and things like weather, you can't predict that, and you also can't predict people's reactions to anesthesia. And so we wanted to make sure that patient safety was always at the forefront of this discussion, which is why we said not generally, not typically overnight. We did come together. We did work on some compromise language. We are very close. Some issues came up after we had asked for the Dash amendments to be written, and we want to have the opportunity to address those issues on the Senate side since you guys are running out of time. We've committed to coming together and working those through on the Senate side. There's just a couple of small changes we think that we can all reach agreement on. So thank you for allowing me to testify today, and I'd be happy to answer questions or the other members of the panel.
Chair Greenlich, members of the committee, I'm Kathleen Cosgrove. I'm here today representing the ambulatory surgery centers. I do want to thank my colleagues for working together. I think that what you have before you in your Dash 3 amendments represents a good faith compromise by all of the people who participated in it. I think that Dr. Leonard made some very good points in his conversation. I can tell you that the ambulatory surgery centers would love to have the stay extended as it is in 22 other states to 23 hours, 59 minutes. But as a compromise, we have worked out some existing language that we thought could carry us forward in such a way until CMS finalizes the federal guidelines, which they're in the process of doing now. So what we tried to work on was some language that would carry us over to that time, give us enough flexibility, and try to take into consideration the majority of the ambulatory surgery centers. I will tell you, in presenting this out to our members, we have a number of members who, because they are so diverse and because there are so many specialty groups, it impacts people in different sorts of ways. So again, to reiterate what Jane Ellen had said, I would like to reserve the right to bring some of those issues up over on the Senate side if we need to as they come forward, because we're just hearing about them now. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Claudia Black, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Medical Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3269. As you've heard, the work group met. This is probably the best product could come up with at the time, and as both these women mentioned, we've heard from other members in the meantime, and so we would like to continue to work with it on the Senate side. We understand there's a very tight timeline, and looking at the amendment, I can see that there's already one place where it was different than what the three of us had agreed on, so we definitely do need to do some more work, and we are trying to address patient safety and work with the proponents of the bill as closely as we can and still achieve everyone's goals. Thank
it's
you.
It's also going to Ways and Means if we pass it. Yeah. Anyway, there'll be lots of time to work on it again.
Because of the fee.
And then Mauer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions.
First off, was this brought forward because we have a problem today with ASCs?
Chair Greenlich, Representative Maurer, we don't know if there's problems in ASCs throughout the state. We have ambulatory surgical centers at this point aren't required to report complaints and to post complaint numbers. DHS doesn't collect the data that they do on other healthcare facilities, so it is hard to say that there's a particular issue at this point. What we wanted to do is actually kind of, as this continues to explode as a service delivery or a facility or part of the service delivery system, we wanted to get our hands around it as a state and really go forward from a place of patient safety. We've gone from 10 ambulatory surgical centers in the mid-1990s to more than 75 today.
And follow-up, so does the Dash 3 get us to alignment with federal proposed rule changes?
Chair Greenlich, Representative Maurer, I think the Dash 3 does a number of very good things. It implements a accreditation process. It outlines who the accreditation process can be. It says that DHS is to come out and to inspect the ambulatory surgery centers every 3 years, but they may accept one of the accreditation surveys if they approve it. So it does, I think, address all of those issues that were raised, and the ambulatory surgery centers welcome that opportunity to have the oversight. We also agreed to raising the fee so that DHS would have adequate funds in order to make the more frequent inspections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank three parties, and I forgot I left out the Medical Association and the hospitals and the surgery centers for working on this. I really appreciate that. And I do think this is a good place to go forward. Just to clarify, because of the fee issue, that's why it's Ways and Means. I like Section 5. You probably know I'd love to see that a little stronger. I'm not opposed to, you know, requiring agreements with fully capitated health plans for the ASCs, but I'm happy with 5 as it sits right now. I appreciate the attempt at compromise. And speaking to Representative Maurer's question, given the way this is a very viable part of our delivery system, I don't think it's unreasonable to ask for alignment with JCO standards or anything like that. In fact, some of the testimony we heard were from ASCs who are like, yes, we're accredited. We do all this. I think that's the standard we should strive for, and I'm glad that we have that connection in the amendment. So I don't think it's necessarily something wrong. I think it's a matter of maintaining the quality over time as the system expands.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the Dash 3 amendments, perhaps Ms. Cosgrove, I'll ask you, Section 4, the ambulatory surgical center may not perform surgical procedures which the patient typically would be expected to remain at the facility after midnight on the day of the procedure. And you said something about the preference would be 23 hours and 59 minutes, but wonder if their surgery was scheduled at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so they would have to go home before midnight, even if they weren't ready under this provision.
Chair Greenlich, Representative Flores, that is my understanding. That we did put a little bit of flexibility in there that says typically, in other words, we, as this is written, we would expect the ambulatory surgical centers not to schedule a surgery at 5 o'clock that had the risk of going beyond midnight. But if something unexpected arises, they do have some flexibility to be able to keep that patient in the ambulatory surgery center as long as it's needed for safety. Or they all have emergency provisions and agreements with hospitals if they need to transfer that patient to a hospital.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, Claudia Black. I would just like to mention that one of the hospitals has come forward, a hospital that has a hospital-operated ASC, and they've said that their plan in the future is to start having surgeries in the evening, and so this would be a problem to them at some point. It would need to be addressed.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember from the one of the public hearings that we had some discussion about the lack of specificity in some of the terms that are still remaining on the first page of the Dash 3 amendments, for example, extensive blood loss and major or prolonged invasion of body cavities and the blood vessel issue. And I know at least one surgery center talked about how, for example, tubal ligation reversal involves a major body cavity, and certain kinds of catheters typically placed for IV access involves a major vessel. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you arrived at leaving most of these terms in here when I thought that was a pretty big concern of the surgery centers.
Chair Greenlick, Representative Bonamici, again, that's compromised language. I think if you asked each of us, we would have other language that was preferential to that. Where we decided to go with it was to look at the existing Medicare language and to try to have some degree of consistency with what was being said on the federal side and what we're putting in the state statute. The problem, again, is that those federal standards are in the process of changing, and they are expected to be modified, or as I understand it, to be in effect by January of 08. So it's rather like trying to hit a moving target on that, but that is the language that currently stands, and so that's why it was adopted. But I leave it up to the committee to make any modifications in that if they see fit.
Not today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to add to the chorus of people that thanked all of you for working together on compromise language. That said, I've really struggled with this bill, and I recognize that the intent is really to improve safety of patients. But I'm still trying to get a sense of what the problem is or where it lies. I'm a little bit concerned about moving something this significant where there's a lot of work left to be done. And I'm hopeful that if we move it today, we could consider moving it without recommendation to Ways and Means, given that it seems that there's still a fair amount of work to be done on the bill.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, even though the contrary has been said, this appears to me to be purely TERP. We have a bill that's seeking to solve a problem, but nobody's been able to identify the problem. Only there could be a problem, but there's no evidence that there is a problem. Nobody's come in saying, look at the increase in malpractice cases because of these surgical centers or anything like that. Maybe saying, well, you're not required to report it, but people report it if there's a problem. We have 22 other states.
Of course, we can't find out from the
board of examiners
there is a problem. So
we do have the fact that 22 other states allow it to be less than 24 hours. We do know that that there are greater incidences of problems with surgeries that occur in the middle of the night because of probably alertness or something. So if a surgery really needs a long period of time afterwards just to make sure everything's okay, are we really forcing now to be 5 a.m. surgeries or 4 a.m. surgeries so that there will be sufficient time after surgery to have the stabilization take place so they can get out by midnight? And so I hate to see a bill go forward when it looks fairly obvious that what we're doing is compounding a problem that doesn't really exist, in my opinion. So I'm not favorable to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In response to Representative Gelser, I would be fine with moving on without recommendation because I do think it's a work in progress. But again, I don't think this is so much about trying to fix a problem as to... It was very interesting early in the session when we had a bill, and I can't remember which it was. I think it was the infectious disease one, where we were talking about healthcare facilities, which was the hospitals, the long-term care, and ambulatory surgical centers. And it really became apparent that we have a slew of regulations on our long-term care facilities and our hospitals, but yet we have an entire system of surgery centers that one assumes they're accredited, and most of them are, at least that's my impression. If I'm a person going in, I'm assuming there's a certain level of government oversight. I think that's all this is asking for.
If I may comment, JCO is not a government agency. In fact, it's a volunteer program, and so it's not affiliated with any government agency, although the feds require it of military hospitals, and so they carry a lot of weight. My concern is that this is a good thing for ASCs are a good thing for patients because it's usually less expensive for minor procedures, and we have an issue of cost in the healthcare system, and this is not about lowering those costs. This is about creating another layer that just kind of adds to that whole issue of cost. And clearly, we want these places to be safe. But at what cost? And who's eventually going to pay for it? And it's going to be the consumer.
I was intrigued. I was looking through my files and came across a paper I wrote in 1972 on ambulatory surgery in a hospital, which had been taking place at that time for about 15 years in the Kaiser Hospital, where we're using the hospital operating room but not admitting patients and discharging them right out of it. And one of the issues that was raised in that paper is what happens when this moves out of the hospital. I mean, it was an interesting, you didn't look back 35 years at something. This has been going on a long time, and it's an issue that's very interesting.
And
I don't know why I raised that.
Mr. Chair, in Mrs. Nye's second grade class, I remember reading that
report. Did you pass the test? Yeah, I've been around a long time, I guess. All right, thank you all very much. Do we have a motion on the dash threes?
Mr. Chair, yes. I would move the dash three amendments to House Bill 3269.
Is there any discussion on the dash threes? Any objection?
I will support the dash three amendments, but I don't feel comfortable moving this with a DPAS recommendation. I have too many concerns about it.
Okay.
So
I think we're going to have a motion to move it without a DPAS.
Thank you.
That's what I'm sensing in the ozone. You don't have a problem with the dash threes. Is that right?
Correct.
The dash threes are a part of House Bill 3269. Representative Kotek?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3269 as amended to Ways and Means without recommendation.
Is there any discussion on that? Aaron, will you please call the roll?
Yes, hesitant.
No.
Aye. I wasn't keeping track. Aaron, what's the count, please? 6-3, thank you. HB 3269 will move on to Ways and Means without recommendation, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 3269. Open a work session on 3368. This came to us from Innocence without recommendation, with the intent to move it to the Rules Committee without recommendation. There's a lot going on with health care reform. We've got probably Senate Bill 329 coming over from the Senate. We might have Senate Bill 27 coming over from the Senate. This is a bill that represents the Health Policy Commission's attempt on health care reform. The Revenue Committee is a logical place for it, if I didn't say that, because it has included in it a payroll tax, and it would just be handy to get it over there, probably to sit for a long time, so probably until after the end of the session. Yes.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I understood you say rules.
I was thinking of instructions I just got on HJR 18. Yeah, it's revenue is where this bill needs to go, because it has revenue implications. I'll be back with a rules recommendation in a bit.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't privy to the committee discussion on this. Is this basically, I realize the wording isn't quite the same, is this striving to set up a commission or an exchange that is basically the same thing as the connector system in Massachusetts?
When this bill came about directly out of the draft final recommendations of the Health Policy Commission, I referred to it informally as Massachusetts on steroids. It's very similar to Massachusetts.
Mr. Chair, it's not the whole system, though. As I look at this briefly, it's the connector system. I mean, the connector system in Massachusetts is just it's not a government entity, but it was established by government. It's actually a private entity, but to connect the dots, if you will.
That's exactly.
That's what this is. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it obviously... yes, what? Yeah. Come on, Janine. Let's ask Dr. Smith up to talk about it for a moment. Briefly.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, for the record, Janine Smith, Office of Health Policy and Research. In answer to Representative Bruin's question, I was just agreeing with you, Representative Greenlick, having spent a lot of time with the Health Policy Commission, and we have Nora Leibowitz, who's here, who helps staff the Health Policy Commission, if you had specific questions about the exchange. But an exchange connector, the Policy Commission wanted to be different and call it an exchange. The Massachusetts folks call it a connector.
And do you agree with my characterization of it being Massachusetts on steroids?
Yes, of course. Evidence
bigger biceps? I mean, help me understand.
Well, for example, the issue of Massachusetts had something like employers that chose not to get involved would pay something like $300 a year or something. This has a payroll tax that would pick that up. But I mean, if we were seriously looking at this, it would take a lot of discussion, similar to what 329 did over several weeks, which Representative Richardson and Representative Cannon, Representative Maurer and I sat in on. They really have been in the spotlight because they worked all through the interim on it, and I think we'll have much more serious discussions on Senate Bill 329 when it gets here, and it seemed sensible to let that move first before we saw what was going on with this.
And Chair Greenlee, both bills have, or at least 329 has a reference to the exchange/connector in it.
Yep. So I suppose it might make sense to put the amendments. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Put the amendments on? Representative Cote?
Mr. Chair, I would move the three amendments to House Bill 3368.
And is there another one as well?
That's
three. Okay. Representative Cote has moved the three amendments.
Maybe I did.
To 3368. Is there any discussion on the threes?
And Mr. Chair, my thinking was just if this is
let's get a shorter
the substantive content, then it makes sense to make sure it's so there's it's over there in one piece for them.
I think that makes sense. Any objection?
Don't see them.
They're in today's file.
They're big.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And
it wasn't in today's pile. It was.
Wasn't in today's pile?
We should have gotten it when we had them on the 25th from the access when it was delivered with materials.
Okay. We got
like, I mean, I have an extra copy.
No, he's got them.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So can I confirm, I'm feeling a little bit uncomfortable just because it seems like a very big project, a very complex bill. You're not asking us to vote, support, detract from the bill. You're just asking us
to move it
on to someplace else for a more thorough discussion
exactly.
at a later time.
That's exactly
okay.
right. Yeah, to move it without recommendation to revenue.
Okay.
Where it will, as amended, if we amend it, where it will sit, in case the health policy decision
goes in a different direction than I expect it's going to go.
Thank you.
I'm singing my name is Bill again.
Did we get the dash threes accepted?
What were you singing?
Any objections to dash threes? Dash threes are a part of 3368. I'll take a motion to move it without recommendation to revenue.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3368 as amended to the Revenue Committee without recommendation.
Is there any discussion on that?
Mr. Chair, I just have to say this. I have a concern. I mean, in this bill is a mandate on every individual in the state of Oregon to purchase health insurance, and there are significant issues around that kind of a mandate. And it's addressed in Senate Bill 329, but it's addressed in a little different way. And so I have trouble with that consideration of that type of mandate. And so I'm going to
remove. Yeah. It says basically that this is a shared thing and that employees and individuals and businesses need to be a part of it. But it requires tons of discussion.
So I would reserve the right to vote no on the floor.
That I created in education this year a courtesy no. Which is
okay. Well, I'll go there.
Which gives you the right to vote yes on the floor if you change your mind. It's something that never gets to the floor. It seems very unlikely.
Can I also comment? Yes. Because there's a perception when there's unanimity that there was really unanimity, I will be voting no on this because of the mandate, because of the tax aspects, because it hasn't been vetted. And there may be an assumption when it was received in another committee that the policy committee has looked at this, and so now they're just being looking at it over there just for some revenue issues. And so I'd want, we can't put notes on our vote. It just shows up as either aye or nay, so I'll be voting nay.
That's great. We have had discussions that indicate, I mean, that my view is, and I've never seen this codified, is that if you vote with a recommendation, you're making a policy statement. You said without recommendation, you're not making a policy statement, but no is a perfectly good vote. It's as good as yes. Is there any other discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye. 3090 as amended without recommendation is on its way. I'm sorry, 3368. I should know that. It's my own bill.
Yeah, and you're looking at the next one.
I'm looking at the next one. 3368 moves to the Revenue Committee without recommendation. Through page one. We've done 3490. And 3090?
No, you didn't.
Okay. Wait a minute. Let me close the work session on 3368 and say we are not going to hear 3090. There was a request for replacement amendments. The people who asked for that request couldn't figure out how to get amendments that would pass federal law, so they decided they need a little more time to work on it. And we will hear from it again in another time. Maybe another place. Yeah. That pesky Constitution, things like the Commerce Clause, causes all kinds of trouble. Okay. I'll open a work session on 2918, which comes to us from the Access Committee. And we should have a new amendment on this, as well as one we accepted in Access. And Representative Gelson, will you discuss this with us at least?
Sure. I would be happy to do that. House Bill 2918, with its amendments, is very different than the original bill. This is a bill that was sponsored by Representative Buckley and others in response to the growing number of individuals with autism and pervasive developmental disorder. There was a lot of conversation in the initial public hearing. I was there because I testified about the difficulty that children with autism in particular and children with disabilities in general have with accessing health care. And there were kind of two parts of this. One were services that covered autism and pervasive developmental disorder treatments specifically that are not covered by insurance, such as applied behavioral analysis. And then in the other pot were services that are provided maybe to everybody else in a covered family except for that individual, and they are excluded through their policy specifically because they are a person with a disability. The amendments reflect that there was not really a way to get at that question of whether or not health benefit plans should be required to cover any specific form of treatment for autism or pervasive developmental delay. And the amendment that was adopted was the -3 amendment, which instead tried to address that issue of equity. So it's not a mandate. It simply says if an individual is covered under a health insurance plan and there is a covered benefit, that person cannot be found ineligible for that covered benefit simply because they have a neurological condition including Asperger's syndrome, autism, developmental delay, developmental disability, or mental retardation. So it's not a mandate. It simply says all members of a family shall be treated the same, and if the benefit plan covers 12 speech therapy visits in a year, you can't be denied those speech therapy visits because you have mental retardation or autism. And the amendment is also clear that this is subject to the ordinary limitations of the plan. It's not asking plans to add new services.
And we have, in addition, there were three reactions to the original bill because we weren't quite sure how to deal with it. What we were quite sure from our hearings is that the question of autism particularly is a huge and growing problem. And what we proposed as a compromise is the -3 amendments, the -4 amendments, which I'll talk to in a moment, and the announcement by Dr. Goldberg that he and the folks from the Department of Education would form a task force at their own expenses to look at to update a report that is about 10 years old to try and create a proper state response for dealing with autism. Commissioner, Superintendent, I guess, Castillo, Superintendent? Yeah, Superintendent of Education, has agreed and, in fact, is very anxious to work with Dr. Goldberg looking at how to plan for the future. The -4 amendments you have in front of you just came today, and the -4 amendments will ask the Health Resources Commission to conduct a review of available medical and behavioral health evidence on the treatment of a pervasive development disorder. There was a lot of question about what the state of the art was in both on the medical and on the behavioral side of dealing with pervasive development disorder and autism as one of the subcomponents of that. The PED board has been worrying about that exactly, and there's agreement that this should be the next review that the Health Resources Commission would do anyway, so there's literally no fiscal on it. The PED board has volunteered to support it, and Dr. Smith, perhaps you could come up and comment one more time, please.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Janine Smith, Administrator of the Office of Health Policy and Research, in which the Health Resources Commission is staffed and housed. They are the commission that's volunteer that does the pharmaceutical drug reviews, and the has in the past actually in our statutory obligations to do medical technology reviews. Most recently have done bariatric surgery for obesity. They updated the one that PEB had done earlier, and they're just now working on a non-bariatric surgery report. And I've had discussions with the chair of the Health Resources Commission, and also the Health Services Commission is housed in our office as well, and they had started to look at that from their mental health subcommittee. So we had thought that between what PEB's been looking at it in terms of how they approach coverage for this for the public employees. So we felt that trying to get a better, clearer review of the literature would be beneficial to multiple groups within state government.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Any questions?
Yes. I have a question.
Yes.
On the dash four amendments, which I like, my one concern is that on line three of the amendment, it suggests deleting lines 5 through 31 and pages 2 through 5. Doing that would invalidate the dash three amendments.
All right.
And I'm also on page one, making this the new section one, would remove the part that made section two, which were the dash three amendments. It would remove that from being made part of the insurance code. And I like the dash four amendments and look forward to seeing that, to seeing the study that comes out. The dash three amendments have a very immediate possibility of making a substantive improvement in the lives of a whole bunch of kids in Oregon that are being excluded from covered benefits under their plans. And I'm wondering if there's a way to do this with the dash fours without eliminating the dash
three. Yeah, do you think we can get an LC up here? Did you see it? Did Lori do this?
Yeah. Or we can, even at the time, if she's very, you know, overwhelmed, maybe we can put in with the request to not create a conflict with these amendments, but in combining them, create them so that there is a marriage rather than... So she can fix it as she's redrafting them.
She's available. Did you see it, Lori?
1243.
Yeah, I think we'll find a way to make sure
just
one doesn't...
Help.
Right. And I would like to do that, and we'd like to support the dash fours. I just really don't want to lose the dash
lose
threes.
The dash threes.
Because
no.
I think that's
no
the point you're going to make. Oh, I know that's not the intention, but there's this offers such a significant promise to families that are waiting.
Chair Greenleaf, Representative Gelser, I think the submission to LC was prior to Friday's hearing where we had discussed, where you had discussed this.
Thank you.
Another question.
Can we?
You can close this. And
yeah.
Let's
close this. And is she available?
Is she on the way?
Okay. Well, let's stand at ease for a moment. Stand at ease. Two, nine, one, eight. And ask for unanimous consent of the committee. We need open work session. All right. All right, all I need is reopen the work session. Reopen the work session on HB 3269. And I'd like unanimous consent for to suspend the rules so Representative Floyd can change her vote on 3269.
There
is a Floyd. Oh, my God.
Floyd on the road.
That was brilliant at its best.
Representative Stem Cell? I'm sorry, Representative Flores. Is there any objection?
No.
How do you vote on 3269?
That would be no, thank you.
Okay.
So she changes an I from I to no.
From I to no. You have that recorded? Close the work session on 3269. We're going to begin losing some members possibly, so we're doing very well. We need to keep doing it as fast as we can. Yeah, let's go while we're waiting for L.C. Freeman. Let's go into H.J.R. 18. This is an amendment to the Constitution to declare health care as a right. It was amended with a Representative Richardson amendment, and I would like to move it to rules. If that works, I'd prefer to move it with rules with a due pass recommendation, but if that's not the pleasure of the committee.
Which, Mr. Chair?
HJR 18.
Right.
Which amendment?
Which amendment was Representative Richardson's?
The dash five.
Dash five. And there's dash sixes on the table as well.
There are?
Yeah.
We just got those.
Yeah. Dash five, Representative Richardson's. 18-6.
Okay,
it's no, it's mile.
Hmm?
Where are we?
Where are we? We have the dash fives. I prefer not to consider the dash six. I prefer to move it on as we've amended it. If that doesn't cause a problem, and I would request a motion to move it to rules with the due pass recommendation as amended with the dash fives.
Mr. Chair, I would move HJR 18 as amended with the dash fives to the rules committee with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate this. The dash six amendments, which we're not considering apparently, changes the language that basically, instead of saying it's an absolute right, and to me an absolute right should not require a positive financial obligation on others necessarily, although it may. And what the dash six is pretty much say we're going to do everything humanly possible to ensure that all Oregonians have health care, but call it something other than a right. And that's without that, I can't support the resolution, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. My intent of the motion originally, and is, you may remember, I tried to get this as a as an initiative and fell about, only gathered about 120,000 signatures instead of 140 or so that I needed, is to establish the rights language in the Constitution as background for the work we're trying to do. It's going to rules because we want to make sure we get a little clearer language about that right means. But I didn't have a problem with the first part of the six, but the whole purpose of it was to establish the fundamental right language. So it essentially changes that.
Yeah.
Ms. Representative Gelsey.
Mr. Chair, I'm conflicted because I support and collected signatures for this initiative last year and support the idea that healthcare is a fundamental right for all people. But I have concerns about the way the wording is constructed, as I've shared with you previously. And I'm just concerned that which would be a very long discussion to get into. I would be more comfortable if those words could be addressed and some of the issues that were raised before could be discussed before I put my affirmative on it.
Well, there are some other members that have issues as well, and that's why it's going to rules rather than trying to work it out here. I hope it will be, and I expect it will be, working rules where some of these things, some of the language can be dealt with. Representative Richard.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank you for the consideration that was given with the Dash 5 amendments, and I think that it will, that this is going to go forward, and I think it will be more accountable to the people and clearer for them to have the wording as it presently stands. I fundamentally have a difficulty as I go back over it, because I think that while health care is hugely important, so are other things. I mean, shouldn't there not be also a resolution that having sufficient nutrition is a fundamental right? What about, I mean, because how can you live without that? What about fundamental right to housing? And I think that all of the arguments that could be said in favor of a constitutional amendment for fundamental right to health care would apply to other things that people need to get by. And yet, I don't think that is what the Constitution is about. Philosophically, the government is in place to help protect people so that they can live their lives, not to assure that they are all equal, egalitarian, socialistic, from cradle to grave. And so, while I'm strongly in favor, as you know, of us working toward universal access in a way that is affordable and sustainable and acceptable to the people, I think that putting a constitutional amendment like this is not the best message, and so I will be a negative, although it's going to another committee, and I'm sure it's going to pass.
I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Gelsey.
Could I clarify what my concern is?
Sure.
It's actually different than Representative Richardson's. I do support the idea of having in the Constitution the language in the first in the first sentence of Section 46. My concern, as I shared with you previously, is the second sentence that talks about incrementally expanding health care coverage. And if that's in the Constitution and we go through a recession and we end up with reductions in the Oregon Health Plan or other, are we then violating the Constitution if we have budget reductions and people come off of the rolls? And does that then mean that is held harmless when we have an economic decline? And maybe it should be, but I think that's a conversation that the legislature should have. And I know that there was a point where we were going to get an opinion back on whether or not
they said
that.
We did get an opinion back.
And I haven't had the opportunity to see that and understand it. And that's my concern. It's not a lack of support for universal health coverage. It's just a question about the wording of lines 7 through 9, which I shared with you previously.
Well, first I can say we've had since 1858 an obligation to provide a common system of schools. Our funding's gone up and down for schools, and we had that Measure 1 that was attempting to say you had to fund it at a certain place or you had to send a letter to the principals as to why you didn't. We did get an opinion. It was a quick opinion, not a studied opinion, and the Legislative Council, I'll be happy to share it. I'll get copies and share it with the committee. Basically said, that's an interesting question. And that was essentially the conclusion.
That there
just isn't really any way to know without a, she had a week to answer, so this wasn't as if she had the chance to do it. It wasn't. Council Freeman, it was another council, and I will share that. And that was basically the. Yeah, that's really an interesting question. Representative Cantor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I am happy to support this. I do, however, wish that we had the opportunity to really work on this in this committee and weren't forced because of timing here to pass along the buck to rules, since I think this is such an interesting issue and one that I'm sure there will be additional work on. I also wanted to point out, partly in response to Representative Richardson, I did some study of this question of rights after we heard this bill the first time, and it is there is precedent, of course, for these types of rights that may imply requirement of action on the government's part and not within our own United States Constitution, but perhaps within the Oregon Constitution, as Representative Greenleaf mentioned, with regard to education, and certainly within the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And again, that not a subject of unanimous agreement worldwide, but it does include the right to work, equal pay, rest and leisure, education, compensation to secure food, clothing, housing, medical care. I think as a statement of our primary sort of expectations and principles for our government and society, I do support this notion, and I'm looking forward to seeing it move forward.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor.
Yes.
We have a roll call.
Aye.
Representative Berlin.
No.
Representative Cannon.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
No.
One minute. Is there a question about what we're voting?
Yes, there's a question about, are we voting with a due pass or
I
no recommendation?
I think we're voting with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
As amended with the dash fives.
With the dash fives going on to rules.
And no sixes.
Correct.
Correct.
Going to the rules.
Where were we in the roll call?
No.
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move H.R. 18 as amended with the dash fives to the Rules Committee without recommendation.
We have a motion on the floor to move H.R. 18 to Rules without a recommendation as amended. Is there discussion on that motion?
Mm-hmm. There's a discussion, kind of parliamentary procedure. With or without recommendation, does that
makes a new motion.
The motion sufficient that you're not really just reconsidering the prior motion?
Yeah, it may. I checked that with Ramona, and that's a new motion, and therefore able for another vote.
Okay, thank you.
check that specifically last week on another bill. Is there any discussion on the motion on the floor? Well, would you please take the roll?
Aye.
No. Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. HJR 18 moves to rules with without a recommendation, as amended. I'd like to reopen the work session for House Bill 2918 and ask if our counsel could join us for a bit. Well, it seems like the Dash 4 amendments wiped out the place that the Dash 3 amendments amended. Is that a problem? Can we just pass the Dash 4s and we'll put it back together, or what do we have to do with that?
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, my name's Lori Freeman. I'm with the Office of Legislative Counsel. And yes, because the Dash 3 and the Dash 4 are not fatally in conflict, in other words, they can be reconciled, if you were to pass both the amendments, then it would come back to our office and we would just fix it so that they could both be incorporated into House Bill 2918.
Should we put that on the record that that's our intent to do that?
Yes.
Okay. President Gelson, is that?
Yes, that resolves. And I would therefore move the Dash 4 amendments.
Thank you very much. We have a motion to include the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2918. Is there any discussion?
Are the Dash 3s already adopted?
Yeah.
The Dash 3s were adopted in the subcommittee.
Okay.
Yes, Representative Kotek?
No, that was my question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I can have just a minute to hear you on both. Is there any objection to the Dash 4 amendments? The Dash 4 amendments are accepted as a part of 2918. Can I have a motion on 2918?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2918 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
I would like to put a couple of things on the record. I would like to put that on the record that it is our intent that both the Dash 3s and the Dash 4s be reconciled. I'd also like to put on the record that it was clear in the subcommittee that the Dash 3s were not intended to create a new mandate, a new insurance coverage, but that Dash 3s were only intended to assure that where there was insurance coverage, people were not excluded from that coverage because they had a diagnosis of pervasive development disorder or one of the sub-diagnoses within that we had no intention, and we'll do that on the floor as well to make sure we were not attempting to expand the insurance coverage in any way.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Cannon.
I do have a question about the Dash 3s. I know we adopted them, but now that we're considering the whole bill, and I guess looking at line 6 of the Dash 3s, I wonder why that may is not shall. If our intention is to provide certainty for patients who have developmental disabilities, that they will receive the same care as other patients on the plan with respect to copayments, coinsurance, deductive, and coverage. Why is the language so permissive?
Well, the required language is in section 2.1, right?
Well, that's the way it looked. And then what is the purpose of 2.2?
Is to allow the insurance companies to subject those patients to the same requirements that applies to other illnesses. I think that's, well...
Correct.
That's Representative Gelson.
So there's two questions there. First, the section of Part 2 is to state that we're not saying to give these individuals more services than anybody else in the plan. But, for example, some insurance plans currently have exclusions that say services are excluded for your child over the age of 7 years old who has, and it lists off those disorders. This would make that not possible, but also would indicate that for those services that were covered, you would still be subject to the same co-payments, co-insurance, or deductibles. I asked Legislative Council in a telephone conversation about changing those mays to shalls, both in the may not deny benefits and the may be subject to, and she started a conversation about permissive and not permissive in different contexts, and then said it was a conversation for a different day, but that in this context it was not permissive.
Well, if you could just follow up on that, my understanding, because this came up either in one of our committees or a separate committee about this may and shall, was that the may not is a very clear, that's like shall not, that's restrictive, may be subject to, where it's the positive expression. It's not a may not, it's a may. That's permissive language. So if that's the intention, fine. I'm not sure it's clear to me that it is our intention that section 2.2 is permissive.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to offer that I am comfortable with a may in line 6, because I think that gives the company the ability to say, well, we don't want to subject this particular person to a co-payment or to a deductible. I see that as a different, it's not the mandate part of, or the requirement part of the bill. I know it's not a mandate. However, while we're on the subject of grammar, I read the sentence one in section 2 about 8 times, and the way I read it, and I just want to clarify this, is a health benefit plan is defined in the statute, may not deny benefits to an individual who is covered under the plan on the basis that the individual has a pervasive developmental disorder. And it's probably saying the same thing, but the because I thought was a little vague. And what we're trying to do is make sure that they're not denying coverage on that basis.
Yeah, if I were to add a word, it would be simply after plan.
Right.
Simply because of the plan.
Although simply be the simply because it's not,
because can become modified differently, right. And so it can become ambiguous. And if we took a motion to add a simply,
that would make it clear, do you think?
Well, we have the ability to add conceptual motions if it's one word, I've been told. So if it makes it clear, if Representative Gelser is all right, and Representative Cannon is all right, we could take a conceptual amendment that would put simply before because.
Mr. Chair, I would be more comfortable with language that was on the basis that, which I know is more than one word, but I just get concerned.
One word is all we're allowed.
I understand that, but I'm just concerned that if the language was simply because, the argument could be made, well, primarily because the person has a disability, but also whatever reason. I'm afraid that simply
makes it solely. There is an also in this, in reality, and the also is the limitation of expected benefit in the time frame. I mean, that's where some of these problems come, and it's that the rehabilitative services are frequently limited to circumstances where they expect significant change in a short time period. I mean, that's where most of this argument comes from. And I think we should be here, but this seems necessary. I mean, it's just the way it is. It's up to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I understand the confusion. I'm just concerned that solely or simply opens up a can of worms in these situations, because there have been all sorts of reasons given why these individuals are denied needed health services that are covered for everybody else in their families. And I think that they deserve that coverage, as do other members. And I would like to see this not have an extra word that would help deny that coverage to that individual. And it's hard for me to process what an additional word would do this quickly.
Do we have a motion on the floor? I think we do. Is that right?
I'm sorry.
Do we have a motion on the floor?
Yes.
We've adopted the amendments, and we have a motion on the floor for a due pass as amended.
Should we move?
So you're discussing.
Are we in discussion?
Yes, you're in a work session.
If I may make a comment about this, this issue of whether or not it's a mandate or not, and that has come up in conversations, we're now parsing what is a mandate and what is not a mandate. And I mentioned in the subcommittee that I, even though I'm not a voting member, that this does not rise to the level of a mandate, but was an issue of fairness about someone that is already covered. And I thought about what I said and will stand by that. But it does raise a question, what is a mandate and how do you define what a mandate is? And this is really close, but I'm not willing to go there today. It's just it's a very interesting question because we seem to like mandates. And it's possible that next session there may be a bill that's going to address what mandates are and how we see them in the legislative assembly. Because I think it is important. It does add cost. It does add stuff that doesn't need to be added to health costs today. And so I'm in support of this bill, but it did raise a lot of questions, at least on my part.
Call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Representative Delser, how about if you and I do this? Carry this one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good. Rima and Gelser.
Okay.
We have two more bills. Let's start. Let's keep going in the order we have. We have 2733. I think 2733 has amendments that came today that I think got us to consensus. Is that right? Can I have somebody from the Bruce? Yeah. Can we have Mr. Bishop and Ms. Edlin? Can we have you join us? Does this have a?
I don't need which one is here.
How are we doing on this one, guys? We're talking about the dash fours, is that right?
Mr. Chair, I'm committed to wrap it up. Bruce Bishop appearing on behalf of the organization of hospitals and health systems. We support the dash four amendments to hospital fund 743.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tina Edlin. I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Office of Health Policy and Research, and for the record, we support the Dash 4s.
Great. I'm very happy to hear that. Can I have a motion to add the Dash 4s to 2733?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2733.
Is there any discussion of the dash fours?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Notwithstanding the fact that we've had two advocates tell us that these are good amendments,
actually,
good public policy.
At least one opponent and one advocate.
Right. Right. In this context, one former opponent and one advocate. So my question is, I guess, having just received these amendments, what do they do? And do they make good policy?
Mr. Bishop, do you want to talk about what they do?
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I had to note that Dave Fiskum from Providence Health Systems had given us testimony.
Dave, do you want to join us in this discussion?
He was trying to say no, don't bring me
sure.
In.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, Bruce Bishop on behalf of the Hospital Association. We testified previously with concerns about the language in the bill. These amendments add clarity about the reporting time frames and the penalties, and with those amendments and the opportunity to have further discussion about the effect of the amendments, we're able to be supportive of the bill in its current form.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, Dave Fiskum for Providence Health System. I wasn't necessarily planning to speak today, but I appreciate it.
The problem is you sit in the room. You know?
I know that. I almost left, Mr. Chair. the concern that we had initially, I think, still exists to some degree, which is that if the report, the assurances that line 19 and other places requires the CEO of our enterprise to sign, if that's what it was, we're willing to do that. But the risk, of course, is the following language on the bottom of page 1 and on to the top of page 2, where it could be construed that the report will be beyond simple assurances of the fact that a CEO takes responsibility for records. We're very prepared to do that. We've thought we've done that all along in recent episodes. So for the record, it's adequate for me to say that we still have some concerns, but our point today is not to stand in the way of this piece of legislation. We understand there's a way to read the language starting on line 19, contain assurances in a way that doesn't require the same kind of specificity as following lines do about deficiencies and other issues that either could become public or could become fodder for legal proceedings. With that said, Mr. Chair, again, we're not trying to stand in the way of the bill because we're in sync with the basic impulse, which is to require executives to do what we think ours now do, which is take personal responsibility for the safekeeping of records, as well as you will see or others will see in this body in Senate Bill 583, the issues with regard to what happens when there is a breach. So that, for the record, is adequate for this evening, Mr. Chair.
And line 99 is only talks about disclosures to their board of directors, right?
That is the way the language is construed, yes, and the risk, I suppose, could be, depending on the kind of form that the Office of Oregon Health Plan Policy and Research requires of us in preceding lines, and we're going to trust that will be in such a way as to avoid the concerns we have about the divulging in public or in ways that become legally discoverable expressions of deficiencies or expressions of concern or too much detail. So I guess I'm prepared to exercise a little faith on the part of those involved as to the kinds of assurances we'll have to provide being of a specific enough nature to be real but not to divulge or risk the divulging in certain settings a material which can be more fruitful for those who want to do us harm than good.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave, so I mean, I appreciate that you've said this is an improvement, but with concerns. Is your position neutral on it at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brune, our position is not to oppose it. it's always interesting to hear people define what words like support, oppose, neutral, no position, not opposed mean. We understand the impulse of this bill, and I've talked to your chair a number of times about it, and I think we have an understanding. I'm comfortable with the Office of Oregon Health Plan Policy and Research providing the forms. I just want to make sure for the record that we do have those concerns expressed to us by our councils, who have spent a lot of time on this issue, as you might imagine, in the last 10 months. And I think we can live with it. And so I guess the direct answer to your question is we're not going to oppose it.
We'll make sure we get things on the record as well.
Mr. Chair, question?
Yes.
How is this going to materially increase the level of security that your organization takes in protection of PHI?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I think the best answer is no. We think we take great pains to provide the proper security, and obviously in a fairly recent example, by some months, that proved not to be the case, and we've learned a lot from that lesson. in terms of protecting records, and for that reason, among others, we have contributed both to Senate Bill 583 in the Senate, to the consensus process that developed it, and have stood with others to talk about this legislature's action on preventing ID theft and responding when there is a case of a breach. At the same time, we have no difficulty but providing assurances that our executives take it seriously. We think they do. So whether it adds specifically and only to the level of security attached to our records, from province health system standpoint, I think that security day has been added to, if nothing else, by our experience.
You've heard me say on the record that I think they've done a great job responding. The intention, I think, is not to increase their security, but it's to help other institutions be more alert to the kinds of things that they've done. I think they've done a great job, and I said that on the record in the subcommittee. It's an unfortunate situation, and great response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your courtesy.
Thank you for your careful words. Is there other discussion?
Yes, Representative Richardson. I've compared the dash fours with the dash threes, and I see what has been deleted, and it appears that there has been discussion as to what would make it more palatable. So my primary concerns are also on the
discussion. Aaron, may we have a roll call? Oh. Wait a minute. Have we adopted the dash fours?
No.
Is there any objection to the dash fours? The dash fours are adopted. Do we have a motion to accept 2733 as amended? We do pass recommendation to the floor.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2733 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion on that motion? Please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry. No, he's here.
Okay, we'll is she up? We'll open the back up and she can vote when she comes back.
Aye. Representative
Brown.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Tosak.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Burton. Aye. Aye. Employees is excused at least temporarily. We'll open it back up. HB 2733 as amended moves to the floor. I'd like to carry this one.
Okay.
One more.
Mm-hmm.
Close the work session on HB 2733 and open a work session on HB 3094, a tricky little one-word amendment. Mr. Dewey, do you want to... You have anything you want to say on this one? Jim, you have something you want to... Oh, Representative Flores, we took a vote on that. We open it back up on...
Okay.
Thanks, man. Necessary. We're all aye so far. Let me close the work session on 3094 and reopen the work session on 2733.
Aye.
Oh, yeah, last year. Unanimous consent to suspend the rules. Hearing no objection?
Aye.
Thank you. Close the work session on 2733. Reopen the work session on 3094. Mr. Dewey and Mr. Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey representing the ODS companies. You've probably heard this bill too much, maybe, from your perspective. It's the prompt pay on the dental side, and I don't think we have an agreement here today. I had, after the previous hearing, I told Mr. Davis that I'd be very happy to arrange a meeting between the claims processing individuals from ODS to talk with his client to find out if there's a problem, where the problem lies in, if you will, not getting paid under the prompt pay statute as we know it today. That phone call or communication didn't come forward. I can understand that. He likes the bill the way it is. There was also some, if you will, a question that came to me later as to originally why the dental community was not included in the bill originally. and I'll very quickly, from what I recall, because I was involved in this a few years back when the OMA came to the legislature. We produced a work group during the interim, and we reached a consensus. And from talking to my colleagues, the situation was that the dentists were being paid. There wasn't an issue. And so it really didn't seem to make any sense at that point in time to bring another player into that particular conversation. And I submit today the same is true from the evidence or the information that we have and we provided to you, that these claims are simpler and they are paid much quicker than, if you will, a claim from a hospital or a physician. So with that, you've had a long day here, and you're going to be coming back on another piece of legislation, 2002, that I don't even want to talk about right now. And so I will be quiet, answer any questions.
Which piece?
Oh, it's in Consumer Protection at 6 o'clock.
Another.
Oh, another committee.
2002.
Right. We're going to be out of here by then.
Yeah. I won't.
Good luck.
Yes. Jim, you want to comment?
Yeah, I would. I'm Jim Davis, representing the Oregon State Denturist Association, the Oregon State Council for Retired Citizens and United Seniors, and other senior groups. We do urge the committee to pass House Bill 3094. We think that the oral health, dental health should be added into the prompt pay statutes. ODS, when they looked at that situation, I didn't hear that they looked at how denturists were being paid, and that is a different issue. But the issue goes beyond that. First of all, we still question why ODS would have great concerns having language in prompt pay. If they're paying promptly, it shouldn't affect them. You know, it's just an overall protection for consumers. But we go beyond this, and it's not just an issue with ODS. Our denturists, we took an informal poll of our denturists, and we found that less than a half do their are reimbursed through ODS, and so there are other dental plans out there. There are, you know, if ODS covers two-thirds even, that means there's a third out there other than ODS. And so really we want the protection to go beyond just ODS. And I don't think this is an ODS issue. This really is a consumer protection issue. And this is an issue so that all people within the dental profession are paid in prompt fashion.
Representative
Kotek, did you have? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just wanted to concur with that. I have, I think we all received a letter from the Oregon State Denturist Association, just reiterating that apparently ODS is the shining star. There don't seem to be problems. That the two-thirds of the claims for dentures that go to other places seem to be where the problems lie. I'd like to see us move this, but I think this makes sense. I think it's a simple change. I don't think there's a problem from ODS. You know, I understand your concern, but just judging from what I'm hearing, you're not going to have a problem with this. It's going to be other folks.
Well, if I may very quickly, Mr. Chair, previously, and I want to make it clear with regard to how we pay claims and other insurance companies, they are blind when they come in. So we are not separating claims from a dentist and a denturist. So that is not the situation, so I want to make that clear. I would say with regard to the total cost, I will submit for the record, it is not substantial. It is an additional cost in terms of administration. And I would say for ODS, and again, this is informal, it's anecdotal. OMA came forward with a study to show what was happening. I'm not suggesting they need to do that for his client, but I would say that for me, I you know, we're doing everything right, and now we have another statute that we have to comply with, and that concerns us.
If I might respond, I think it's an issue of accountability. And, of course, if ODS is doing it right, I don't see where the additional money is going to come in. If they're doing this right, it shouldn't be a problem. But there's a certain level of accountability, and if they're doing it right, they don't have to worry about it. But I think everybody should be accountable for prompt pay within dental services.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Davis, what is the current time frame for payment under our current law?
The current time frame, Representative Flores?
Under the rapid pay law? The prompt pay law?
As the statute, as the law is now.
As the statute. If we added demo for the statute, what would be the time frame? Is that the question?
I'm not certain. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah.
30 days,
is it?
It's 30 days.
30 days. That had been my understanding. Thank you.
And it seems to me, didn't we have some information here that the current pay time frame is somewhere between 5 and 6 days, as it is?
The information I provided is on a clean claim, we pay with ODS pays within 5 to 6 days.
So why would you want this law?
Well, again, Madam, Mr. Chair and Representative Flores, again, that's not necessarily, it would be interesting to see the difference between how denturists and dentists are being paid, but the fact is, this isn't an ODS law. This is for everyone. And so we have lots of evidence that our denturists are not being paid properly, and I'm sure there are dentists out there that aren't being paid properly. This goes beyond ODS. This is an issue across the board that all companies should be accountable.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. I appreciate that, but, you know, you told us just now and you told us in our earlier hearing that there was lots of evidence of that, but yet you have not brought us any evidence of failure to pay or delays in payment. So, and once again, it sounds rather anecdotal to me.
Representative Flores, Mr. Chair, it is anecdotal. We haven't done any actual studies of denturists, but we have called around and have a number of different stories. We did bring Joe Hammer, who's a member of the State Board here, in our original hearing, and he did discuss some of the problems that denturists were having. At the last hearing, we had a denturist, a longtime denturist, one of our pioneers, who was here and ready to testify. So, yes, we can bring forward lots of denturists who are having some difficulty with this, and but we have not done any studies, so yes, it is anecdotal.
Well, Mr. Chair, my question was really to Mr. Dewey: is what is that additional cost is in tracking? Is because now you would have to start tracking this per se,
Mr. Chair and Representative Maurer? Yes, the statute provides for a mechanism that reports to the to DCBS, and this is so we would have to track that and then have to provide the report. And I will submit that's not a huge expense, but it's another expense along the way for insurance companies, and it's going to be different from the, if you will, the medical services side within the statute and in the dental side. So it's going to be another report. Again, it's not big, but it's a precedent that we set here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did we hear from other dental groups, or did you hear from other dental groups in the public hearing?
Basically.
Is this through the discussion?
Yeah, the amendment is to simply add dental to medical and mental health or something. I mean, it's a very... So remember, we didn't hear from anybody else for or against, I think. Is that right?
That would be correct, Mr. Chair. The Oregon Dental... I've talked to the Oregon Dental Association about this bill, and they've said we're getting paid on time. So they didn't choose to weigh in. I don't know why they would necessarily oppose it, but I was somewhat surprised that they didn't come here to say we ought to come in line with these folks.
Mr. Chair, follow up. I guess my question was other plans.
Nobody else. ODS and the dentures. I think I remember that.
Yes. With all due respect, I'm mystified by this. Prompt payment is prompt payment, and, you know, the denturists are having some issues, and yes, maybe they don't have a full-blown study, but, and you've even admitted yourself, we're not talking a major reporting issue. I'm sorry, I just don't understand why.
No, I agree it's not, but, Mr. Chair, incrementally in this process, things add up, and we'll see how that works out after June 29th.
Yes. Mr. Davis.
You've got to get out of here.
I want to make sure I understand this. Right now, the law or the rules are net 30, and you'd like to have the net, it will be net 4 to 6, whatever. Is that basically what it is? And you're not saying that you're not getting paid within 30 days, it's just you'd like to have it within a week.
Representative
Flores had asked what the current situation is, and I thought that the answer was that it was.
No, Representative Richardson, Mr. Chair, believe me, if that wouldn't be a problem, we wouldn't bring legislation for that reason. No, people are having difficulties with months and months of waits to be reimbursed, and with other hurdles and difficulties within the process. So no, it's not a matter of 5 or 6 days or 30 days, because within 30 days, if the law was being met, we wouldn't have a problem. And all we're saying is that yes, everybody should meet it within that 30-day time period, unless there's some reason for not meeting it. And so that's what we're just simply saying. Add dental to that. So across the board within healthcare, you know, we have an understanding that there's accountability for paying within 30 days. That's our concern.
If I may, Mr. Chair, and Representative Richardson, very quickly, the statute speaks to medical services within the 30-day period. And it does not have oral health or dentist or denturist, and so they can be under that.
Your average is low, but it's really a 30-day.
30 days is what the statute provides for.
Yes.
Because I have a couple of denturists that, you know, they're solos or small partnerships, very dependent on cash flow. They have no staying power.
Let's just go with. Do you want them back?
Okay.
I want to thank you for your time, indulgence on this particular issue. It's going to be one of the bigger issues you're going to face. So
oh, it's the last one.
Are you through with us?
The question's reversed.
Well, here we are. This is one where we don't have...
There's somebody here from... I just wondered if anybody else would be interested in adding an opinion on this.
Michael, do you pay dentists? You have an issue?
We do not.
Chair Greenlee, members of the committee, my name is Mike Becker with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Yes, we do have dental plans at Regents. We do... promptly pay from what I'm hearing from our claims people, our dental claims. We generally don't have an issue with this other than the increased administrative cost that has already been mentioned.
Okay. Well, here we are.
Mr. Chair, this has been a very interesting argument because this really hits home to me. It's not dental, but medical. But talking about, you know, I'm a one practitioner office, my wife. And so we deal with this on a daily basis, is cash flow and trying to get claims in. And quite frankly, when you submit a, quote, a clean claim, whether it's on paper or electronically, it's like, boom. But if it's not clean, watch out. I mean, it might be months and months before you get the whole thing figured out. And it's quite frankly, it's the federal government that puts a floor. You submit a clean claim to Medicare, and it can be approved in a matter of minutes, but they can't pay it for 14 days because that's just the law. I'm not quite sure why they can't pay it if it's clean, but that's just the law. But the issue is how do we bill? And paper, I'm assuming most interests are on paper. Some would be electronic, but the paper claims are an issue. And if we had direct data entry so the small providers could enter data directly in the web, you know, patient information, here's my bill. I think that would be a huge step for most rural and real small providers, medical or dental. And some insurance companies provide it, but some don't.
All right, guys, we need to get out of here, too. We're losing the committee.
Chair?
Yes.
Do we have a motion yet?
No,
I'm not a motion then.
We already did one.
So I would move House Bill 3094 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I'm surprised the only one today, almost the only one we haven't got, pretty good. So it's just you pay your money and you make your choice.
Mr. Chair, before we vote, can you hand around a coin so we can do one of these?
Oh, you can do better than that. Sure. Aaron, would you please call the roll?
No.
No.
Beth Cannon.
Excuse.
No.
No.
Aye. Motion fails. And I close the work session on HB 3094. I thank you all. I think you did amazingly well getting all these bills out today. It was a year of hard work, and we'll get the hell out of here.
Well, wait, we're going to announce just real quick while we have you guys.
Next week, we ought to go to three full committee meetings rather than subcommittee meetings. The question is how to schedule them. And it seems all right, Monday and Friday, although you have trouble with Monday, is that right? No, you are right on Monday.
People were concerned with the 6 to 8 Wednesday.
Can we do 3 to 5 Wednesday?
Is that okay?
Who's out on 3 to 5? You have a problem with 3 to 5, is that right?
I do not have my calendar with me and would not venture to guess what Clinton would say about where I can be.
Well, if you're not in another committee...
Yeah, I know. We'll be setting up the room.
Okay, we'll be setting that up.
Yes.
And we'll get to but full committee on Monday, 3 to 5.
Yes.
And then Friday, and then our normal time on Friday, and no subcommittees.
Ever again,
or
right?
Well,
this week
in May, we're trying to get the bills out.
Could we consider if we're moving to fulls, maybe swapping Friday for a different 3 to 5
for Tuesday? Everybody can make Friday as a point. Yeah,
you
yeah.
Know, if people could make the incentive, we could go Monday or even Thursday.
We've got the room. We could go Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday.
Well, except Representative Mauer
can't do that, right? You've got another committee on Tuesday and Thursday.
Well, I have Ag, but they obviously can work without me because they did today.
So. Or you can work between.
No, I'm being somewhat facetious.
But not every day.
Are you on the Ag committee?
Yes. Yes.
Which days do they meet? They meet
Thursday, 3 to 5.
Tuesday, Thursday.
See, that's
so
the problem.
If we had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out.
Maybe Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday or something. We could
drive home earlier Friday.
That's right. See, and people, they would love us
if we got out of the building.
Is Mauer the only one that can't make it?
No, I'll look at it.
No, I hate to take you out of your existing committee. Yeah. And Representative Mauer came on later, so the schedule was...
Oh, this one's on. This doesn't start until May 7th.
Monday, full committee. Sandy, will you talk to every single person on Monday and find out what's going on?
Monday? I have to call before Monday. I will find out.
No, Monday we'll meet.
Next Monday is a full.
Next Monday will be a full.
May 7th will be a full. 3 to 5. But there probably no...
What's the date today?
Today's the 30th, May 7th
is next
Monday.
We're going to meet the subcommittees next week?
No, this week. You have a sub. She has a sub tomorrow. You have a sub on Wednesday.
Today's
she has
Monday.
A sub
I'm
on
sorry.
Thursday.
We got plenty of time.
And then we have a full this Friday.
No problem.
Are we not gaveled out?
Yeah, I did gavel out, didn't I?
I thought
no, I didn't. Yeah, you stopped.